Hey there, what's up, Warrior? It is Jeff from WarriorLife.com, and welcome to podcast episode number 391. So this week, my girl and I took the grandkiddos on over to the Florida State Fair, and my body is still paying me back for all of the deep-fried goodness that I devoured over there. So it was a pretty good time for me to hit up an old friend of mine and have a chat about how to develop the willpower, the focus, and the drive to stick with our goals. And I'm talking about personally, professionally, and yes, even tactically too. And I'll tell you, this episode, it's quite a bit longer than most of our other episodes are. And if you ever struggle with staying on track with any aspect of your fitness or your health plan or your self-protection training, there's some really great advice that's sprinkled throughout this entire episode. So you might want to go back through it a second time, or you can go and grab the cheat sheet for it over in our Warrior Life Academy Loot Locker. Now, one of the other reasons that I took this direction this week was from a card that I got in the mail from one of our listeners, Mike Abbey, who is a retired police force lieutenant. And yes, a card in the mail. Remember those? And Mike wrote to us and he said, "Hey, Jeff and team, many thanks for your continued quality podcast. I continue to listen and learn. Keep up the good work. I would love to see you guys tackle more warrior wellness issues. I know that you support wellness. I've started a wellness blog myself at onbeyondblue.com. So I'd be interested in what you and your team think. Thanks again, and keep up the good work." No, thank you, Mike. Thank you for your service and for your feedback, too. And listen, everybody, go check out Mike's blog, especially if you're a first responder or military, and show our brother in blue some support on over there. It's over at onbeyondblue.com. Plus, if you're loving our podcast, please go and leave us a badass five-star review wherever you listen in. You can go find us and subscribe to our channel at iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, wherever you get your podcast fix from. And now, let's talk tactics.
Tactical firearms training. Urban survival. Close quarters combat. Welcome to the show that helps you better prepare for any threat you may face in your role as a protector and a patriot. This is the Warrior Life Podcast.
All right, tell me if any of this sounds familiar to you. Your phone is beeping and it's blorping. Your email inbox has 1,000 different emails screaming for your attention. Social media is flooding you with notifications of likes and comments and shares. And hell, let's make things even a little bit more personal. You're probably not exercising as much as you should be. You're not eating as well as you know you should be. You stare at a screen all day long and then spend the evening staring at an even bigger screen, only to go to bed and toss and turn during the night just to get right back up in the morning and do it all over again. Now, in the end, this is absolutely a recipe for a weak mind and a weak body, not the mental and physical strength that we need to be ready for any threat that you might be called to face, right? But who has the time, the energy, and even the mental bandwidth these days to put into doing all the things that we know we should be doing? Well, if any of these factors have found their way into your life, and trust me, most of them came from my own personal experience, then you're in the right place because it is time for a warrior makeover. Hey there, Warrior. This is Jeff Anderson, Executive Director of WarriorLife.com and the Warrior Life Academy. And with me today to help us all better develop focus and more discipline, and yes, even a stronger body, no matter how old you are or what limitations that you have, is my buddy Mike Gillette. Mike, welcome back to the program, man.
Hey, Jeff. Great to be with you.
Always good to have you here, especially with a lot of the things you've been doing recently. You've been up to taking some shifts in your career, and I'm really interested to see how these are kind of playing out and some of the tips that we can draw from it also. Some of you might be familiar with the past things that we've done with Mike with podcast episodes and that we've done with training, like bigger training. Mike's got a story that really does read like an action adventure novel. And he's got basically his own life of that's, it's really become like his own best case study for attaining whatever goals that he wants to in life. Now, he grew up a poor, scared, scrawny kid in an environment of extreme violence and substance abuse, but he never let the conditions of his life hold him back from achieving great things. In fact, Mike took his real world experience and his challenges and turned them into a unique set of mental, physical, and tactical skills to carve out his own destiny as an Army paratrooper, SWAT commander, high-end bodyguard, combatives instructor, combat fitness instructor, and even a record-breaking motivational strongman whose feats have even been documented by the Guinness Book of World Records and Ripley's Believe It or Not. Now, even at over 50 years old, Mike is highly sought out as a peak performance pioneer, and he continues to push beyond his own personal limits while teaching others how to do the same. Now, you can learn more about Mike and his training over at www.mikegillette.com, and that's two L's and two T's. So head on over to mikegillette.com. All right, Mike, let's go ahead and get started here. Actually, a lot of this podcast really came out of a personal need, so I'm kind of being selfish here, but I think most people understand that our mind is our greatest asset when it comes to being more focused and more disciplined. And that really comes down to anything that we want to accomplish. But it can also be our biggest challenge too, right? I mean, I think for the most part, we do it to ourselves. We really sabotage ourselves. And a lot of times I think we don't even really realize it. So when you're working with people on kind of peak conditioning and peak mental performance, what are the biggest mistakes that you see people making that detract from our being able to be more focused and have a more disciplined mind?
Well, I think the first problem that most people have is sort of attributing to circumstances. This is just how things are. This is just how I am. And once we sort of adopt that attitude, well, where can you go with that? You can't. You're in essence stuck. So when I hear people say, well, that's, you know, I can't help it, it's just the way I am. I always relate that to my own experience, which, you know, you sort of alluded to during the intro. If we were truly captive to how things are or how we are, no one would be able to have these sort of, point A to point B origin stories, you know, that can be encouraging to other people. So the first thing that I really try to instill in people is the idea that, you know, first off, you know, as you said, Jeff, you know, everything comes from the mind. Mind navigates the body. We all say things like that. So we all intellectually know that, but we generally don't live that out. And and that was sort of a pivotal point in my own personal development very early on in my life when I sort of tried to transition from someone who had assimilated through all of the ambient negativity of my early life. When I decided that, okay, I want a different life, well, it's great to decide that, but how do you do that? And, you know, 1981, 82, you know, I'm 18, 19 years old. I didn't know how. I mean, a lot of what I eventually developed as sort of a methodology was just sort of, you know, by necessity, it was for me first. So, if I didn't have some sort of expectation that I could make things different, you know, you make things different by making yourself different. And that's really kind of the bedrock place that we start. You know, if you're not happy with how things are, well, fix yourself. I guarantee you that's the one domain that we have potential control over. If we will declare that, if we will accept that premise, so the idea philosophically is accepting this idea that things can change. And then the next layer of that is, well, who's going to make that happen? Well, you are, because if not, it won't. So that's kind of where we start. And then, you know, we kind of layer in additional subtleties from there, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like, and I wrote that down, like you make things different by making yourself different. It sounds like one of the biggest challenges that you come across is people kind of scapegoating, like blaming the conditions of their life, or it's my boss at work, my spouse doesn't listen to me, my kids are driving me crazy, it's the politics, it's whatever. Like it's always some outside condition that limits what we do. I think when it comes to personal goals, that becomes a little bit more challenging to scapegoat, right? Like, because those are things kind of in our own control. But I do still find that there's like a lot of, like, even, and like I said, this podcast is largely like for my own therapy, but because I always have a lot of things that I want to get done, I want to have a better body. I just came back from the state fair last night in Florida, and I was telling my team this morning in our meeting that I had I started out with loaded onion rings and then deep fried Oreos and then fried clams and French fries, which is my death row meal, by the way. And then, you know, worked my way up to the funnel cake right before I left, all promising myself that I was going to, like, the next day, like, today's the day I'm getting back on my, back on my game. So I think it is a lot of the, you know, we do it to ourselves sort of thing. But I like that. I mean, blaming others seems to be a big problem. I can't blame the funnel cake maker doing the funnel cake, right? So, like, mentally, what are maybe some of the biggest mistakes? Like, I can pull probably some stuff right out of there, but what are the things that we kind of do to ourselves that might be self-sabotaging?
Well, the interesting thing that you point up is that it's very easy, particularly, I think our generation, Jeff, was really the first generation where it became very common. You know, well, I come from a broken home. The school system fit, you know, it became kind of accepted that it's always everyone else's fault, you know, and that's kind of permeated culture. And which reinforces the tendency to just sort of accept the status quo, you know, and to feel sort of powerless within yourself to do anything about that. So when you talk about things like self-sabotage, there's two levels to that as well. And the first is kind of a passive or a lack of awareness that leads to that. And the lack of awareness is frequently where, you know, I begin conversations with people. And if we sort of look at how things work for others, how things work for ourselves, and I have sort of a representation of that. It's a model. It's a worldview. So it's not science, but it's sort of true. There's an acronym, STEDO, STEDO. Situations, thoughts, emotions, decisions, outcomes. And, you know, so the sort of the first thing that we encounter experientially are circumstances or situations. Well, what do we do about that? You know, do we scapegoat? Do we blame others? Do we just, I'm powerless against funnel cakes and we've all been there, you know. So I'm just a victim of deliciousness and good smells. Whereas when you can start looking at everything around you as something that you have a lot more control over, again, you know, if we sort of repeat one of my most often quoted maxims, which is, you know, control the controllables. And the first thing that happens there is, well, If I'm going to control the controllables, I need to figure out, well, what are the controllables? Okay, then you start in the obvious places. Well, there's me. Well, how many layers of you are there in that equation? Well, almost an infinite number of layers. But when we start looking at what's controllable, we also start to sort of, you know, filter out, well, what isn't controllable? You know, the weather, other people's attitudes, you know, the boss, you know, the spouse, all of those things. And when you start realizing that those were never under your control, although a lot of us sort of conduct ourselves as though we can, you know, influence people by just, you know, wanting things very badly or thinking really hard about it. When we start to develop a certain level of awareness and objectivity about what is truly under our control, we stop wasting so much effort on things that are not, and we start to, you know, take that surplus of effort and channel it where it's a little bit more appropriate. So the first thing is kind of this, the sabotage part is just not being aware that we can take a much more proactive role in how things go in our own life. But there's also a conscious aspect to the sabotage, and that's where we talk ourselves out of things. I'm not good enough. It's all politics. You have to know the right people. And that's sort of, you know, I'm taking my lack of progress and I'm placing it back on the shoulders of, you know, other metaphorical villains that are preventing me from doing these things. And I think that the sabotage is not just, well, you know, I have a lot of negative thoughts because XYZ reasons I've assimilated from my childhood or school or what have you. I personally think that it's a little bit more of a unintentional fear management technique, because here's the thing. You can go to the state fair and you know, sample. I'm still trying to figure out what loaded onion rings are. I can't stop thinking about what that is. But, you know, you can kind of avail yourselves of all of these things, which have an interim amount of pleasure associated with them, even though you're sort of thinking in the back of your mind, man, what am I going to, you know, I'm going to have to work this off. You know, this isn't good for me. This is giving me a stomach ache. And, you know, yet we're still crushing the Pop-Tarts, the deep fried Oreos, for God's sakes. And, you know, so then the next day comes, well, maybe tomorrow, you know, and we sort of, you know, delay things because delaying things is less painful than starting the thing and then risking failure. You know, if I lay bare, you know, the wants and desires of my soul, and they're just right on the table, that means I'm laying it all out there. I know that I've done it. If I say, I'm going to go to the gym, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that. Well, now two things are going to happen. I'm either going to A, do that, which is going to be hard. It's going to represent change. Change is scary. Or I'm not going to do that, which represents, you know, disappointment in the one person you really don't want to disappoint. And that's yourself. But I spared myself, you know, the accountability, because if I can just kind of keep delaying, then I can, you know, find reasons. Well, the gym's really far. The gym's really expensive. You know, there's so much conflicting advice in the world about how to eat right. You know, nobody knows what they're talking about. So screw it. More funnel cakes for everybody. So I think part of it is not knowing that we can change things. And part of it is knowing that we might be able to change things, but fearing what happens if we fail to change things. Make sense?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I was actually just listening to another podcast this morning because I think that's put out there a lot, right? That the reason why it's interesting you're bringing this up, because it was in the podcast. It was related to more like business, but like of having things that you want to achieve, but why don't we actually implement the things that we know we should be or whatever. This was a business podcast I was listening to, but the expert that was on said one of the big things is people don't implement it because they're afraid of failing. That's never been my thing. Like I don't believe in failure. I always said if I ever went to Navy SEAL school, I would die because I probably couldn't swim enough to be able to get through it, but I also wouldn't quit. Like I'm never afraid of failing. It always just seems to be, for me, it's weird. And I wonder if other people experience this as well, or if you've come across this, but I like that it's the pot of gold, right? At the end of the rainbow. And it's like the leprechaun just keeps running after it, but it's always out in front. It's like, I always like success to be out in front of me. Yeah. Like, you know what? It feels really good to eat the funnel cake tonight. I know I can get in amazing shape, the best shape I ever have. I can do that tomorrow. And actually tomorrow is today. So I have to put up or shut up today to my girlfriend. But for me, it's like, I like the thought that success is right out in front of me and I'm going to get there and it's right in front, but it always just kind of seems to be right out in front of me. I have a book that I've been trying to write for like 10 years and I'd never get that damn thing done, but I know it's going to be the best book. But I just keep putting it off because it's, and for anybody that's listening, it could be any goal that you have, whether it's your health, whether it's something at work, whether it's something with your family. You know, I don't know if anybody else, I'd like to hear from people if you do experience that same kind of thing where it's like, I like that success is in front of me and I don't have it right now, but I like that. It's like this big giant carrot that I love to be right out in front of me.
Yeah. Yeah. What you're saying makes a lot of sense with me. It resonates with me, but I don't think we're typical. And I think one of the reasons, you know, the fear of failure looms so large for the average person is the average person is not sort of entrepreneurial minded, you know, like you are, or just crazy like I am, because living the way that we do, I mean, you know, we've got overlapping areas of interest and expertise, but we also sort of, you know, are pursuing things in some pretty significantly separate ways as well. It's all about the hunt, you know, it's the chase, and, you know, and success is, you know, that creature that, you know, we're in pursuit of. I think the average person is much more interested in comfort. The average person is much more interested, and here's where the fear comes, acceptance from others. Even if it's, you know, other people that they don't really have that much respect for, they just, you know, they need to be, you know, accepted to whatever degree that, that resonates with them. And, you know, failing causes you to risk not being accepted because people will know, you know, and it's that accountability piece. And, you know, one of the things I used to notice when social media was just kind of, you know, getting some steam, people would make a post on say Facebook or what was that, MySpace. And they'd say, hey, I'm kind of excited. I just joined a gym, or I'm kind of excited. I just started this new diet. And rather than seeing, you know, follow-up comments of, hey, good luck, man, kick ass, it's all, well, oh, you look fine the way you are, or don't get too carried away, or be careful. And it's sort of like the mob doesn't want anyone to be exceptional because that shines a light on how unexceptional they are. If you and I are buds and, you know, we sort of grew up playing video games together, we're both sort of got that video game physique, and you suddenly start going to the gym and I'm not, and you start looking like you're going to the gym, I have to deal with that. So I'm going to, you know, passive aggressively encourage you not to get so, oh, he's just, Jeff is obsessed, man. I'm worried about him. He's at the gym all the time. Well, no, Jeff is making me look like how I look, and I don't like that. So there's, it gets reinforced internally. We, you know, we don't want to risk failure. We don't want to have people notice that we, you know, gave up. And then we sort of seek the company of other militantly mediocre people to sort of reinforce why it's okay for us to not go big after, you know, whatever that thing is. You know, it's, you know, you launching another business line, or, you know, me finding another means to sort of test myself mentally / physically, which always, you know, carries a certain, you know, physical risk and, or just the risk of disappointment, those kinds of things. So I would imagine that within the space of this community, you have people who are, you know, if they've been sort of typical people, they're looking for ways to be less so. So they're interested in, you know, the empowering information that you provide, because it starts to change the way you think. Someone who feels like they can protect themselves feels like they can manage their destiny to a degree that the average person cannot. You know, they start looking at the environment and themselves, and they see potential solutions or potential remedies rather than just, you know, more and more layers of scary things to, you know, keep them locked safely in their home.
Yeah. Good point. I want to take this in a little bit more of a kind of a tactical area here, because every expert in our industry talks about staying in the yellow zone, right? Like to be tactically alert at all times so that you can spot danger from 1,000 miles away. I mean, you were a high level bodyguard, and I did some bodyguard work for a while, some security work. But one of the things that always struck me about it is how mentally, well, one, how boring it was. It was always like a dream of mine until I got it. And I was like, oh my God, this is the most boring job I've ever had. But it was also mentally exhausting, because you really do have to kind of be on alert like all the time when you're on. So, I mean, you worked at such a high level with this, with celebrities and everybody else. Like, what are some of the tricks that you've picked up to stay as like tactically alert as possible without it becoming mentally exhausting also, but still be effective, especially for the, this isn't really just necessarily for like security. This is for the average, you know, Joe and Jane Schmo out there who really just do want to live a more prepared lifestyle, more protected, and want to be more tactically alert. Like, it's not just lip service.
Yeah. Well, that's a really good question. And I sort of lived through having to find my own way in accomplishing that. So in my early days of being a cop, I found that, you know, if it was a really busy shift, you know, mentally you're fatigued because, you know, some of the things that are going on obviously are, you know, are very emotionally draining, a lot of adrenaline, that sort of thing. You know, people trying to kill you always gets your attention. But I also found, and this was sort of a paradoxical reality that I had to sort of figure out when I was still very young in that profession, is even if it was a slow shift, I was just as tired. Well, how can that be? Well, eventually it dawned on me that maybe it's, you know, my level of mental engagement that is contributing somehow to this phenomenon. Of course, that was the case. So what I started to do, and I had kind of a reintroduction to military service that was kind of happening on top of this. So a million years ago, I was in the Army, and that was to get money to go to college because I was interested in becoming a cop. But then when I was in the military, I sort of found what I thought was my home. And it was a pretty significant climbing accident that medically got me processed out of the military, broken back, ankles, things like that. You're never going to run again. You can't jump out of any more airplanes. You know, you're just freaking done. And, you know, when you're 22, that's a lot to handle. So as I was able to sort of reconstitute myself physically, get back into the, you know, being at least a viable candidate for law enforcement, concurrent with that, I had an opportunity to return to military service via what was called a LRS unit, long range surveillance. And, you know, so I'm jumping again, in addition to my cop life. And it was in that capacity that I really sort of had to, because when we would do these missions, you know, you have to get to very close to the enemy, and you just have to be able to document everything. And this can play out for a very extended period, you know, days, and, you know, nominal MREs and all of that sort of a thing. And what I found is that you can be on only so long. And if you are too on, you know, it's kind of like sprinting. You know, think of attention like sprinting. You know, how long can you sprint full out? You know, it's a finite amount of time. If it's going to be a longer, you know, if you're going to run a mile, that's a different pace. If you're going to run a 10K, that's a different pace. A marathon, that's a different pace. So what's sort of the duration of, you know, the mission? You know, well, what's the mission? Is it, you know, just getting home from the store? Is it, you know, staying the night in a hotel in a strange town, and you didn't get the hotel room that you were hoping for, and this 3-star is closer to a 1-star, and things are sketchy. Well, I have to kind of be on it all night long then. If it's, you know, we're using a bodyguard analogy from that chapter of my life, well, how long am I going to be with the client before I can reasonably, you know, take some sort of a break? And it's an understanding the duration that I think is the biggest trick. And it's recognizing that it's no different than physical output. You know, one of the things that I often say, I mean, people can argue with this, is, you know, the mind is the body is the mind. You know, you have to think about yourself in terms of, you know, the totality of the organism that is you. So I look at attention and focus, and, you know, we talk about Cooper and his color codes. You can only be extremely vigilant for a certain amount of time. Now, you need to be extremely vigilant if you just heard a noise outside your home. Okay, until we get that resolved, you know, we have to be absolutely in it, mentally speaking. But if it's just navigating the mundanities of regular life, and you talked about being bored for extended periods of time, I think part of how you deal with that is understanding what it takes to process things efficiently, and what level of attention can you maintain for a particular time. I have not learned, I mean, other than specific exercises, you know, that I teach, which are helpful for developing focus, but those are helpful for developing focus in the short term. Okay. I'm going to write for 90 minutes. I need to be in that place where I can just, because I got a lot I have to get done. But I also know that after about 90 minutes of that level of concentration, I need to take a break. And the break thing is whatever the break needs to be. You know, that might be, okay, I'm just going to close my eyes for 10 seconds, couple breaths. Okay, I'm back on it. You know, I'm back, eyes on the target, what have you. But if I don't build in that process, I mean, you know, look at like when a sniper is deployed with an observer, they have breaks that they have to take. Otherwise, you know, not just, you know, the physiological aspect of, you know, the whole optic, you know, process, but just the level of concentration things. Just you, when you become fatigued, you are less able to make the, you know, snap objective decisions that are necessary in that type of application. So when you are protecting yourself and you're protecting your loved ones, you are, you know, you are the assault team, you are the sniper, you know, you are the intelligence gathering mechanism, you are the medical care, you are everything. So the way that I approach that aspect of my own life is just by being in a place where I kind of make some decisions. Now, anything can happen. This can backfire. You can't make, you know, lots of assumptions, but we all have to make assumptions. Is the pavement dry? I'm going to drive at this speed. Is the pavement wet? I'm going to notch that down. Is the pavement icy? Okay, I'm making assumptions, you know, based on my own experience of how I have to engage with the environment based on the variables that are confronting me. So things are different when you're home. Things are different when you're on the road. Things are different when you are, you know, in certain neighborhoods, and you have to sort of elevate or kind of, you know, lower the intensity level accordingly in order to be where you need to be. And that was probably more of a conceptual and less a trick of the trade type answer than maybe you were hoping for, but that's how I approach it.
No, I think there's actually some really interesting aspects of that you got me thinking about. I mean, one is, it's easy for quote unquote experts out there to say you need to be in, you know, code yellow all the time. Essentially, if it's true code yellow, if you really are like staying alert. I mean, I think just by knowing that bad things happen to good people, mm-hmm. and I think we're, you know, if you want to call that yellowish, right? I think mm-hmm. most of us that spend any time thinking about that, and that can be the average person just who mm-hmm. owns a gun, who carries concealed or whatever, like you're more conscious at least that bad things can happen mm-hmm. out there. So it's kind of a yellowish zone, but the truly kind of like alert, it really can be maybe overboard also in some instance, mm-hmm. right? If you're at the daycare system, maybe that's, you know, some toddler biting at your ankles maybe isn't such a big threat for you. But like last night at the state fair, the place is packed. It's mm-hmm. packed, and you know, not everybody there looks like they're all, you know, just came out of like the boardroom at the Fortune 500 company. So I mean, I'm relatively alert. But you brought up something that I think really made me think, which is if you are on a security team, like you ran teams, you put together teams for guarding principals, and if you really care about the life of your principal. And you go to take a break and somebody else is taking the door or taking whatever, you have to be like, you have to have the confidence that person also has the principal's best interest and wants to keep mm-hmm. them alive and will jump in yeah. front of a bullet. So when it comes to the family, it kind of really does lend not credibility, but it really builds up the need to make sure that your family, as much as they're willing to be more alert, that they mm-hmm. have that mindset also. Now, in my last marriage, I was married to somebody who did not want to live that way. Did, you know, it, in fact, was vehemently opposed to it, just wanted to live this rainbows and puppy dogs lifestyle. Which is fine. Like, you can't force somebody out there. I know it's a big mm-hmm. problem that a lot of our listeners have. A lot of people that I work with have is like, how do I get my spouse to come along? How do I get them to be more survival minded to this and that? And it's like, ultimately, sometimes you can't. I wasn't mm-hmm. able to have them make that transition, which just mm-hmm. meant that when we were out and about, it put more burden on me mm-hmm. to be more alert because I couldn't count on that. Now, last night at the fair, I can go do stuff because my girlfriend does think like that. She mm-hmm. is street smart. She does carry concealed. She is savvy. And so mm-hmm. I know I can rest because I have faith in what she can do. And we talk about these things and we train and we do these sorts of things. And I have faith and confidence. She's like, she's my partner there. So I think it brings that need up there, that if you really do work with your family, if you have not just shove it down their throat, but it does call up the need to at least keep conversations going, even just noting news items that can happen, not from a paranoid standpoint, but for those people that do struggle with having family members who aren't as alert or conscious about bad things happening, is just talking about the news, because there's more than enough stuff out there that can do that. But yeah, just that's one of the things that really just got me going. And the other thing I thought about, you kind of said also, I remember in the Army, especially, I was on LERP teams also, and it's like for long range reconnaissance, but it's like there were times where we did not sleep. We were going from one objective to another, especially in 10th Mountain Division. We were just constantly, and so sleep was a rarity. But when you just took a break from a road march, or you were just going there, like you somehow learned to hypersleep, right? Or if you're in the back of a deuce and a half, if you got really super lucky, it was like your head went on the M16 and you just like, you could just knock out like that, because you learned to kind of take a super break. And I think that's really important for everybody that's listening, is when you can turn off and you have that, you have the ability to, and the confidence that the things that you protect are still protected and you can take a break. It's like, what are you doing to take a super break? Because you might not have that much time. What are you doing with your sleep? What are you doing with your breaks? I've started to get into more breath work, and I'm getting back into my meditations and things like that. It's like, how do I hyper break? How do I like really recover as best that I possibly can?
You bring up a really interesting point, or several. The first is, I think, important, you know, to kind of reinforce to everyone listening, and that is, you can't force, or I don't think you should try to force, you know, if you are ninja minded, great, good for you, God bless. That may not be who your spouse is, you know, or who your partner is, but that's okay. Yeah, that does, you know, perhaps, you know, put more expectation on, but, you know, in the same way that if somebody told you, hey, just chill out, Jeff, don't be that way, it's like, no, that's not you being true to you. That's not how you choose to engage with life. So if somebody wants to be more, you know, in the unicorn side of things, okay, fine. You know, that's how things are. So it's, and these questions come up, you know, how can I sell the idea of being, you know, stone cold ninja to my significant other, you know, or to other people in my circle? And it's like, well, you know, do your best, make a rational case for it. And, you know, they're either going to accept it on its merits or not. But when you brought up the EP universe, one of the things that was very helpful to me is, obviously, when you are, it's just you and the guy who sits on top of the Fortune 50, it's just the two of you. Your attention level is here. However, it's just the two of you. And if you are visibly acting as though your attention level is here, the person that you are protecting is not going to feel protected. Part of what you're doing by being there is not just, you know, leaping in front of the hypothetical bullet. You're making them feel like they can have as normal a life as possible, given who they are. And the way that you do that is you dial it down, at least externally. So, for example, if I was driving, we'll say, the founder of the world's largest software company, and it's just the two of us, and it looks like somebody's tailing us, am I going to communicate that? Not until I actually have to do something. You know, not until I'm, you know, crashing that car, or I'm shooting, or, you know, whatever. But up until that point, it serves no purpose. I'll sort of, you know, I'll do what I do to kind of verify, is this a threat? Is this, you know, something I need to have the follow car deal with or not? So the ability to sort of be here, but kind of look like, no, it's just another beautiful day in scenic Las Vegas, that sort of separation is is as much a skill as, you know, you're talking about the kind of getting reacquainted with meditating. Okay. Anything that allows you to feel as though you have a better handle on taming the internal landscape from the neck up is invaluable. You know, anybody who goes to the range and every time they go to the range, they're frustrated because they don't shoot the way that they think they should based on, you know, the dry fire stuff. And, you know, they're working the mechanics at home all the time, but they go out and, you know, the visibility or the something, and they just, they get too amped up. So anything that we can do that makes us, you know, feel more in control, you know, whether that's more, you know, more range work, different range work, sparring, going to the gym and just, you know, getting more in touch with the physical aspect of ourselves. All of that is informing the thought process as well. The, you know, how we make decisions, the things that contribute to us feeling more in, you know, getting back control of the controllables. You know, so in the tactical context, what does that mean? Be as skilled as you can, be as strong as you can, be as smart as you can. Mm. You know, yeah. And which also translates to things like, you know, eating better than worse, you know, better sleep than no sleep, all of those things. Because again, the mind is the body, body is the mind. We are a singular entity. And, you know, the stereotype of the out of shape gun guy, right? We know those people. Now, if you have specific physical limitations, you know, that's not a judgment. But if you carry a gun because you are, you know, a serious self-defense minded person, and you're neglecting all of these other aspects, which are intimately connected, you know, to your ability to make, you know, sound decisions and, you know, get that weapon on target, then you are, there's your self-sabotage, more of a conscious self-sabotage, if you will.
Yeah. Yeah. Good point, man. Mike, a lot of people, by that I mean myself included, have trouble staying focused on a single task throughout the day. Mm-hmm. That's one of my biggest challenges that I really did. And again, this could be business, it could be personal. I don't have any typical problems when it comes personal, but business wise, it's really hard for me to stay focused when I have so many things going on. So what advice do you have that will allow us to be, to get more done by improving our ability to stay on task?
A lot of directions we could go with that. I think the easiest place to start is what gets in our way of doing the particular thing. You know, so is it? I've got it. You know, for me, and probably for you too, we both have to create a lot of content and so forth with what we do. Well, what gets in the way? Well, anything that's a distraction. What's a distraction? Oh, I don't know. Here's one. You know, how can we get far away from this thing? How can we, you know, silence all of the other captivating screens that might, you know, make noises and flash and so forth and compete for our attention? So the first thing I do when I do anything, whether, you know, it's work or even if it's working out, how can I, can we get back to controlling controllables? How can I manage that environment so that it is more conducive to me getting stuff done and less conducive to, you know, getting distracted by shiny objects. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of, if this is the internal battlefield, how do we prep the battlefield, you know, for optimal success? So that's where I would start. And then beyond that, in some of these things can sound very simple, and they are, it's just one has to be diligent in application. Because your question is a question I get a lot from athletes. You know, how can I stay focused when I'm, you know, I need to be focused in what I'm, you know, with the ball or, you know, the opponent. Because even in situations like that, people can become distracted. And the way that we start addressing that is to actually address it. And what I mean by that is if I am potentially distracted by random thoughts, and everybody is, it never goes away. We just get better at it. So there's never a point where, oh, that's it. I'm just, you know, I'm untouchable, you know, bulletproof brain, nothing gets in without an invitation. Things get in. less things over time, but things get in, and the way that you deal with them at a high level is the way that you deal with them at an entry level. And that is, the first point is recognition. Okay, so here comes, you know, the random thought, and it's starting to adhere, and it's not consistent with whatever. Like if I'm working on some written work, for example, I will stop what I'm doing just for a second, and I'll say, stop. I will literally say that. You know, and I can say that to myself if it would be weird to say it out loud, but I stop myself and I tell the thought to stop. I go back to it. Now, how long does it stay gone? Well, in the early phases, not very long. But what I'm doing is I'm literally speaking to my own mind, which is starting to sound like Gillette's crazy, but it's very pragmatic if you think about it. If you had a dog, like a pet dog, run into the room and it's yapping away and it's distracting you, you would try to make it be quiet. And you can do that. Why? Well, you're the boss. Now, does the dog respond? I don't know. You know, it depends on the dog. It doesn't respond well in the early stage. You have to train that dog to be quiet. You know, the kids keep running in the room, you know, hey, Dad, I drew this picture. Hey, that's awesome. In 20 minutes, I'm going to take a really good look at that, but I've got to have some quiet time right now. So, you know, we manage the environment first. You know, we try to set things up for success, to use that cliche. But then anytime we notice that there is a potential interruption, we say, stop, you know, or not now. And you can make the directive, whatever makes sense for you, whatever is appropriate, you know, given the context. But when you think about it, you're giving yourself orders. Well, who can give orders? People who are in charge. You're in essence reinforcing this sort of internal premise that you know, this is real estate. Okay, you are the real estate manager. Now, you've always been the real estate manager. Maybe you didn't know that. Maybe you're not an effective real estate manager now, but you can be. And it starts by being very simple and very consistent. So here it comes. Stop. And it'll stop, even for a few seconds. Well, how many times do you have to keep doing it? I don't know. How many times you keep getting distracted? That's how many times. Well, that sounds like a lot of work. Yes. When does it end? Never. Well, and some people hear me say that and they say, well, screw that. You know, it sounds like a big pain in the ass. I'm just going to go on struggling with being distracted. Okay, knock yourself out. I don't recommend it. But, you know, just like I can't make this person be self-defense-minded, I can't force solutions on a person. The reason that the mental domain is so seldom successfully tackled is because it's unusual. It's, you know, we don't intuitively know how to do it. Some of the things that we sort of do mentally, based on how we're sort of default wired when we come out into the world, are not things that help us. But if you can start there, you know, no fuss, nothing fancy or exotic or zen-ish. But when you notice a distraction, tell it to knock it off. Stop. And keep doing that. You know, and I mean, you know, there are other layers and more nuances and so forth over time. But, you know, for the average person, you can make a ton of progress by prepping the battlefield and then managing that battlefield. Well, you manage it by taking charge.
Fine. I'll clean my desk. Jeez, Mike. Mike, every time I see you, man, you're in better shape than the last time. Your arms are looking more and more like my legs all the time. What advice do you have for optimizing our health and fitness post funnel cake night for me? Especially as we age, like I'm 54. I'm at the age where I have to start going back and like counting the years. But now, like, when was I born? Okay. I think I'm 54. Yeah. I think I'm 54 now. So, but I mean, I still feel like I'm in great shape, but it takes longer for injuries to heal. And I know we have a lot of older people that listen to us, mm-hmm. all the people up in their 60s and their 70s, but what is the best, like, what are some of the things that you've learned being in your 50s now also, like, for optimizing our health and fitness as we get older?
Good point. So for the record, in April, I'll be 60.
Oh, God.
And I would say first, it's sort of, you know, you have to assimilate a premise. And that is that, and research bears this out, this isn't just, you know, some, you know, positive thinking mantra, is that you can get stronger at any stage in life. Now, as strong as you possibly could have in your 20s, no. But stronger than you are today? Yeah, absolutely. So accept that. Rather than, well, I'm 40 now, so, or I'm 50 now, or I'm, you know, I'm Gillette's age, so it's impossible. It's like, no, it's not. But again, that becomes a very convenient excuse. I know you've heard that excuse many times from any number of people, you know, the people that you grow up with, you know, who've just kind of gone to pot physically, you know, they've got all kinds of really compelling reasons for that. You know, after I broke my back, it didn't just get like magically better. It's still jacked up. I have screws in my right ankle. In my 50s, I tore this bicep. It was repaired. I tore this bicep. Then it was repaired. So, you know, wear and tear is real. I tore this pec. I didn't even know I did it. I mean, it's not like, you know, the normal pec tear is here and, you know, it comes off. I started pulling it off the rib cage here. Now, if you've looked at some of my YouTube videos, it's like, okay, that maybe it was a little of that, a little of that. It's like, yeah, probably. But what all of these things point to, all of these injuries, you know, my relative maturity is, if you want to be fit, first off, what does that mean? What is fit? Well, it means I got to run. Why does it mean that? Now, if you have to run or you just want to run, okay, then it can mean that. Does it mean swimming, you know, or does it need to, does it mean lifting weights? You know, first we need to figure that out, you know, and this is, why, a lot of people sort of, have jumped, on the CrossFit wagon. Well, that's, you know, that's the ultimate fitness program. If you can stand it, if your body can take it, I don't recommend that for most mortals. You know, now it's, if you have the type of robust physique that can withstand that, you can embrace that sort of model and go to some extraordinary places in terms of your personal fitness. But there's considerable wear and tear there. You know, I mean, you know, we always need to think about risk versus reward. And one of the problems with talking about CrossFit is that, what is it? You can't even quantify it. You can make some, you know, general statements about it, but every individual, you know, CrossFit gym is its own thing. So the first thing we need to do is accept that we can, then B, well, what does that look like? You know, for me, getting in shape is, you know, I want to be a certain body fat percentage. You know, I want to be able to, you know, run a 40 yard dash in X amount of seconds. Okay. Then, you know, we need to sort of build towards that. So accept the idea that it's possible, quantify it, and then do what I do, which is develop a vast repertoire of workarounds. At any given point, I am jacked up. And it's what's most important to me is not being comfortable. It's, you know, being as strong as I can for as long as I can. So I'm constantly looking for things that today won't hurt as much as other things, which is not a very reassuring statement. Does that mean that once I'm in shape, I can still like be banged up and sore? Well, maybe. I express myself at this end of the spectrum. That's just me. And if I'm not, I'm going to feel as though I've lost something. And there's a point. I mean, I'm closing in on 60. There's going to be a point where I just need to keep the machine moving. And that's going to, and even that will be an achievement. But that's not today. Mm-hmm. Probably not even next week. So for me, I think the best thing for those of us who are on the mature side of things is resistance training, and resistance training done in such a way that it's not unnecessarily stressful to the connective tissue. You know, it's very easy to damage all the stuff that holds things together. I've done everything that, you know, one can do, you know, in terms of injury and, you know, the connective tissue stuff to really take seriously. But resistance training in a methodical way, is that's how you're going to, you know, keep your muscle mass. That's how you're going to maintain good posture. That's how you're going to keep yourself ambulatory. That's how you're going to keep your joints moving. There's less wear and tear with resistance training than there is on doing a lot of, you know, conventional aerobic type activity. And there's a lot of ways that you can, you know, elevate the heart rate in ways that don't necessitate a lot of pounding, you know, and, you know, you, Jeff, me, you know, World Army guys, right? So there's a switchback here that's like, if I'm not running, I'm not really in shape. And I ran for a really long time. I didn't start getting strong until I stopped running, because you can only go to the well so many times. It's one of the reasons why, you know, people who do CrossFit are fit, they're strong, but they could be, you know, fitter, or they could be stronger if they were more prone to specialize. Their whole jam is, you know, being very sort of, you know, generalists in the fitness domain. And maybe that's, you know, for you. For me, I'm so focused on strength, you know, max output type strength, not durational. The things that I do to test myself are comparatively short duration. And I just need to be, you know, strong and as healthy and complete feeling as I can. And again, that takes us right back into how are we managing stress? How are we eating? How are we sleeping? And those types of things. Any of that make sense or get to where we were going, hopefully?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, one of the things that it's kind of like our, we're really developing our core pillars of the Warrior Life Academy, and we have an all access membership level where these are the people that, like, I want to keep it really small, because we're trying to really get across this mindset of what it redefine what it means to be a warrior, that it's not just the tattooed, you know, long beard, you know, military contractor coming back from Afghanistan, but it's the everyday person. But what are those things that make somebody a warrior? How do you give yourself that term? It's not just a matter of like the cool t-shirt that you have and that you carry a gun. It's you might be 75 years old, but it's what is doing what you can do, right? It's about doing something rather than just giving up. Like you said, like you can look around, you can look anywhere. I can go to the fair last night and see, just look around and see everybody that gave up. Right. And they have, and I can look and see they have a mindset of giving up. That's going to be maybe the way they are, maybe the rest of their life. And I ask everybody, like, when you look around, when you look in the mirror, do you see somebody who gave up, or are you, because a warrior doesn't give up, right? Like, that's why I say I would die in buzz training. You don't give up, but you do what you can do, right? I've had injuries also, and I never thought I would like, yeah, you know, I just even, there were times where I couldn't even, like in the Army, I remember I was out for a while. I had to take up swimming, and I suck at swimming. But I needed to do something because I had a PT test coming up and I wasn't able to get out of it. And so I ended up doing like yoga and breath work, like Kundalini, you know, breath work, breath of fire and stuff. I had no, like, I was not running at all. And I ran my best run when I got to my PT test. And that was like almost like 8 weeks before that. I had barely run at all. But I was so oxygenated, like I was so efficient with oxygen that I had more endurance than I had ever had before. Yeah. So I guess really, like, what I take out of what you're saying is, like, accept that you can be better than what you are today. I love that you said that, right? It's not like you don't need to be your best, but you need to be better than what you are right now. And so we really try to preach to people, it doesn't have to be all or nothing. Like, do something a little bit every day. It doesn't have to be an hour of dry fire. It doesn't have to be, you know, 2 hours down at the range. 5 minutes, you know, a few times a week can have even more effect on you than just going in there and hitting things for an hour and then just not doing anything for another week or so. So a lot of that really did resonate, Mike. I appreciate that.
I like that. And I, you know, your example of the yoga, you know, sort of ties into, you know, I'm talking about a workaround. Mm-hmm. You know, well, I can't do X, then I can do Y. So yeah. I'll give you one ridiculous example of that. For your next question. So, you know, I talked about, I tore this, no idea when it happened. I mean, within a few months, but I got out of the shower one day. I said, wait a minute, you know, there's not supposed to be kind of like a hole right there. You know, and then you're kind of going back in time, because I definitely knew when these tore, because it was screaming pain. But that's life as me. So one of the things I realized when I would do demonstrations, one of the staples is, you know, taking a frying pan and rolling it up. Well, I know that how I do it, it's like, I'm not going to be able to do that anymore because this thing's just going to keep going. So I'm done with that. Well, does that mean I'm done? No, I still had, you know, objectives that I thought might be within reach. And a friend of mine who's sort of the Yoda of the feats of strength community, in my estimation, he's a gentleman named Chris Ryder, and he's amazing. People should follow him just to see stuff that's just, you know, inhuman. Anyway, within the feats of strength community, there are some people who have legitimately, there are plenty of people who have done it, you know, by gimmicking things, but there's a couple of people who have actually, you know, police handcuffs and then broke those handcuffs. And if you ever had handcuffs on, you know that seems like that would A, be hard, and B, be extraordinarily uncomfortable. So my friend Chris, he sends me a video via text in mid-December, and he broke a pair of handcuffs. And I'm like, holy crap. I knew one guy who did that, and he like broke one. He had one handcuff here, and it was on a power rack, and it took like 9.5 minutes. And this is Dennis Rogers. He's the first human to take a crescent wrench, bend it in half. So he's not normal. And I sort of became enamored with this. And, you know, Chris and I talked, and I said, I think that's going to be my New Year's resolution for 2022. I think I want to go at that. So I ordered a crap ton of boxes of handcuffs on eBay. And I'm sure that didn't cause anyone to want to study me for any reason. And we got on FaceTime. He kind of talked me through the way that he did it. And it's not something you do in a demonstration because it took a really long time. It was extraordinarily painful, but I broke the handcuffs before January 1st, even before I even got into 2022. And again, 59 years old, I'm an average sized human, you know, like, you know, 5'9", 180, whatever, depending on funnel cakes the previous weekend. So the thing about that is, A, we can continue to do things, you know, at mature ages, and B, when we do things, and this is, I think, the lesson, when you do something you didn't think that you could do, it's not just a physical thing, it's a mental thing. You can't go back from that. Now you're that guy that broke handcuffs. Now you're that guy who started your own business. You know, now you're that guy that set that audacious goal and you knocked that goal down. You are forever changed by that. And it doesn't just change you, it changes the world because it changes how you engage with your corner of the world. So, you know, when we talk about things like mindset, we talk about things like, you know, trying to be fit. We talk about living like a warrior. When we do that, you make yourself better because, you know, you have set sort of an aspirational lifestyle goal for yourself. And you also make the world a safer place, which makes the world a better place. You know, we need more people who think of themselves like that and aspire to that.
Like, that's awesome. I got so much out of that. So that's a great place to stop right there. So listen, everybody, I've been following Mike for many, many years now. And I think partially because the way that he trains, it's very inspirational to me because maybe it's the military also, like a lot of body weight movement, things like that, which are easy for us to do because it's our body. It helps us on a tactical standpoint, from a tactical level, because when you learn to use your body, you can use your body in all the ways that you might have to defend yourself as well. But even just mentally, when you do achieve those things, I think that is what I've found really drives me the most, is that I will not let myself be in worse shape than when I was in the Army. Like, I've always got to meet that PT test, even though it's been many, many years since I've been in the military. So what standard are you setting for yourself? What standard do you want to set for yourself? Make it attainable, realize that you can. And then when you attain that, don't go back over that line. A lot of stuff there. And if you're looking for those techniques and those tools to be able to do that, definitely go check out more of Mike's stuff. You're gonna like just be driven by this stuff as soon as you start looking at his videos. There is a place where you can sign up for his newsletter there, and there's a really good exercise that you can find on mental discipline and focus that works really, really well also. So go check it out over at MikeGillette.com, and that's two L's and two T's in Gillette. So MikeGillette.com. And until our next Warrior Life podcast episode, this is Jeff Anderson saying prepare, train, and survive.
You've been listening to the Warrior Life Podcast. We hope you've enjoyed the show. You can help us spread the mission of self-reliance and self-protection when you rate us. And leave us a comment wherever you enjoy these podcasts. And don't forget to check out our posts and videos on our social media channels. You'll see a full directory when you visit our website at www.warriorlife.com. We'll see you next time. This has been the Warrior Life Podcast. Prepare. Train. Survive.